This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, May 4th, 2023. I'm Caleb Brown. The Federal Reserve's assessment of the failure of Silicon Valley Bank is out. So who is to blame in the Fed's telling? Cato's Norbert Michel explains and offers some advice for policymakers seeking to reassure depositors while making the banking sector more robust.
Michael Barr is the Federal Reserve Vice Chair of Supervision. He recently issued a report on the failure of SVB, the sort of high-profile Silicon Valley bank that has since been, is it resolved? Is that the right word?
We can go with resolved. Yeah.
Okay.
It's been wrapped up.
Dissolved. Dissolved, definitely. Resolved, quite possibly. So the Federal Reserve essentially blames the failure on management and inadequate supervision. And Barr himself has called for more supervision, I guess, potentially more regulation of a broader set of banks. Based on what you know of this report, what are your takeaways?
Well, I think it's positive in the sense that he didn't simply blame any kind of red herring and didn't just put all the blame off onto the private sector, onto the banks. He is pretty open, or the report, I should say, the report's pretty open, in terms of saying, hey, look, regulators screwed up here. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but they did. The report does admit that. It doesn't go as far as I would like. It refers to certain failures that they had and says, well, we don't really know why. We can't really tell why. It's hard to say why. And that I find baffling. The Fed's regulated SVB for more than 20 years. Whatever happened during the Trump administration, and they do kind of, the report does kind of put some of the blame there on the rollback, quote unquote rollback of some of the Dodd-Frank stuff, which I don't agree with. But that notwithstanding, they were the regulator for more than 20 years. The Trump administration was only a full 4 years, and they didn't have full control over the Fed. They just had one or two appointments to the Fed. And it's kind of, in my opinion, I won't say disingenuous, but it's a little sketchy to go that route. But they don't go too far, so I'll give them that. But as you know, Caleb, in D.C., bureaucracies, every single federal bureaucracy around here is much larger than one or two people.
There's enough in this report for certain entrepreneurial members of the U.S. Senate and House to point to the broader private sector, the broader banking industry, and say, this is clearly the problem is, for lack of a better term, greed.
Oh, yeah, and they will. And Liz Warren's going to do that no matter what. So you're going to get some of that, especially from the Dodd-Frank stuff. They have some things in this report that talk about the banks, SVB's, focus on short-term profits, which, to me, it's like, well, oh, wow, that's a shocker. they were focused on profits in the short term. Go figure. But there's no possible way a bank can operate without interacting with its regulator and without checking an enormous number of regulatory boxes. And the report documents that. It shows all of the regulatory issues that are there. And, you have clear evidence, clear admission of the Fed saying, yeah, look, we had problems here. This bank had more outstanding supervisory actions than any bank in its peer group, 3 times more. And for whatever reason, and we're not really sure why, we didn't do anything about it.
So to the extent that this bank had a great deal of outstanding issues, that it was outstanding in a sense that it was well above other banks in terms of identify problems that the Fed itself had identified. If it's fair to say that, I think you would say, well, depositors at the institution, when made aware of these problems, which I have only to assume most of the depositors were unaware of most of these problems. How do we get that feedback mechanism to include depositors, to include owners?
Well, supposedly in the report says that the board didn't even have a full understanding, which there's some gray stuff in here, but the chief risk officer, they got rid of the chief risk officer, and then they took over a year to try to get a new one. And the report kind of put some of the blame there, saying, that transition, that problem recognition, and then the transition to try to find a new one took too long and was kind of unclear what was going on or why they didn't get a new one. And maybe that's why the board didn't know. I've got a hard time believing that. The typical depositor, on the other hand, is going to be kept in the dark. A lot of this stuff is confidential. So, unless that stuff is made public, the typical depositor is never going to know about this kind of thing. And I think you'd have a good case to make for shifting to a framework where you do make that stuff public. Because right now the notion is you have to protect financial stability for the whole system. And I actually think that's a bad goal. I actually think that that does more harm than good. So, I think that the bank, you should put more focus on the bank having to prove to everybody on a regular basis how good it is. And if there's a problem, then it needs to be brought out right away. It needs to be public.
When you talk about the goal of promoting stability across the entire banking sector, what are the incentives that creates for regulators, for banks themselves? That is, the expectation of bailouts exists, it's out there. But at the same time, regulators in pursuit of that goal, well, how do they react if they know that that is the goal?
Well, you nailed the question. I mean, that's really the heart of the problem, right? If the whole goal is to keep everything stable, then there's an incentive to provide bailouts. There's an incentive to provide government backing. And then there's an incentive to be really deliberate, slow, and sort of deferential to, we can fix this. We just keep going and we can just fix this. And the last thing we want to do is anything that would cause a big problem and cause a lot of attention to the bank and cause customers to run and cause people to freak out. So the incentive is to keep everything hidden, gloss over it. One term that you'll hear in the business is regulatory deference and that's not good. That's the opposite of what you want in terms of the incentives for the bank to operate more soundly and in a less fragile way.
It reminds me a bit. John Allison and I have talked about this, of being brought into a room to sit down with Barack Obama and being told, you must accept this giant pile of money. Right. To hear John Allison tell it, this was meant to protect banks that were not doing very well.
That's right. That was the TARP episode. And the theory there was, if we let everybody see that only certain banks get all this money, then that's going to identify the ones that are in trouble. And that's going to make everything worse because everybody's going to leave those. And so everybody was forced to take money, even the ones that said they didn't need it, even the ones that were safe and sound. Nobody wins in that scenario.
Are there specific recommendations that the Fed Vice Chair Michael Barr makes that you have a problem with, or that you think are especially good?
No. No, on
neither.
Neither really. I mean, I do have, in the sense that most of what he's saying is sort of hedged and kind of recommending a holistic review and that kind of thing. Okay, like that's fine, whatever. That's not really any kind of earth-shattering thing. I don't know that anybody expected them to come out with any really crisp set of recommendations, though. They do move a little bit too close for my taste to, yeah, we need to fix that regulatory rollback we had in 2018. I'm just not there. I completely disagree with that idea. I have a blog post coming out on this in the next couple of days. One of the clearest pieces of that story is that had they not done the 2018 law, SVB would have been subject to a higher and more frequent liquidity coverage ratio regime. And I think two things are wrong with that. One, we're doing this in hindsight. And you know, had that happened, they would have been able to adjust what they were doing. And I'll get right back to that in 1 minute. But aside from that, if you look at that ratio, even in the Fed's report at the beginning of 2022, they would have met the higher ratio. And that's according to the Fed. And there are other estimates that suggest that I've seen that suggest that they would have met it all the way through 2022. Now, there's a question there, though. And one of the reasons that there's a question there is because that's based partly on a projection of what your expected cash flow is. So you've got to make an estimate. Now, are you going to hit that most of the time if you're a bank? Probably so. If you're a really strange, unique bank like SVB, you might be more likely to miss. And we already know that they had an unprecedented outflow. So there would have been no reason for any regulator or anybody to say your liquidity coverage ratio needs to be able to handle $40 billion withdrawal in 1 day. That wasn't going to happen. Like, nobody was going to do that. So that it just wouldn't have helped. Now, the other piece of that is that the other major component is called high quality liquid assets. There are two of the biggest sets of those that are kind of tiered. One is treasuries. One is mortgage-backed securities that are issued by the GSEs. SVB had a lot of those. And the interest rate risk caused them to reprice those when they sold them and take a loss. So arguably, they would have been able to shift more to treasuries. Well, the bank that just failed now, that since we set this up, First Republic, guess what happened to them? They had to sell a bunch of treasuries. So the interest rate risk would have been, you know, pretty much the same on any long-term bonds. So whether they were in long-term treasuries or whether they were in long-term mortgage-backed securities, you had a similar problem. So it's just not okay. It's not, I don't want to use the word fair. It's just not legitimate to go back in hindsight and say, oh no, if we had done X, Y, and Z instead, we know that that would have been fine. Because it just doesn't hold up to a very close scrutiny.
One of the points that you like to make and that I think ought to be very well taken generally is that we want people to have an appropriate level of skepticism toward the quality of the institutions in which they have their money. And in the banking sector, pretty much different from like equity markets, you are almost expected not to have that kind of skepticism.
That's right. And we're dealing with the consequences more so through the years, as we cover more and more deposits, larger and larger accounts, we give more and more people an incentive to not care about what the heck's going on in the bank. And, you know, you don't have to be a financial analyst to figure out these things. And if it wasn't the case that we were doing this, the bank would have a larger incentive to show you everybody in a nice and simple way, you know, what they're doing and to actually be careful because they're not going to go and do something and lie about it, because then that opens them up to fraud. I'm not saying nobody would commit fraud, but that's another incentive there. So we've taken all that away.
Yeah, but in the appearance of looking like you might not be doing something that is either smart or ethical is good enough for a lot of depositors to say, well, I'm out of here.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. And you see it now. That's what's going on with most of these largest failures, because who are the ones who are moving their money? It's the large uninsured people, right? And like, this is widely known among financial analysts and economists and monetary economists. Those are the unstable deposits. Why are they unstable? Because they pay attention to what the hell's going on. And the first sign of trouble, they get out. And if everybody was looking at the system that way, you'd have a better set of incentives on the public side, and you'd have a better set of incentives on the banking side. And no, nothing would be perfect, but nothing's perfect. So, like, that's not the point. The point is, you would make people be more careful, and that's what you want.
Norbert Michel is a Cato Institute Vice President and Director of the Cato Institute Center for Monetary and Financial Alternatives. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.